So before we go further, I just wanted to take the whole our analysis of Mayavad philosophy as a disease condition of the living entity or a spiritual disease. And I picked up this great word, pneumapathology, from really a philosopher, although he claims to be a political scientist, named Eric Voegelin. And he uses that word when analyzing things like fascism, communism, and stuff like that. And sees them all part of what he calls a Gnostic revolt against God. So he's got some real good analyses of these things as a spiritual disease. So that was his word, pneumapathology. I just want to give him credit for it. Pneuma is Greek for spirit. Pathology means the study of disease. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that all living entities come into the material world covered by the dualities of desire and hate. What is it? Verse number? Icha dvesha. 727. Icha dvesha samuttena. Dvandamohet bharata. 727, right? He says. And let me check that out, make sure. Yeah. Now, it's interesting. It's not in the purport to this verse, but somewhere else, Prabhupada says, in commenting on this verse, that the original desire of the living entity is, why can't I be God? And the original hate is, why should Krishna be God? You know, sometimes we have to go through Prabhupada's, like Bhagavatam and other places, where he comments on various verses from Bhagavad Gita and pull them all together. You get a whole second set of purports, and they're very interesting to do that. And sometimes he comments on them without even mentioning the verse. If you happen to know the verse, you'll know what he's doing. Well, so somewhere he does this. The original desire is, why can't I be God? And why should Krishna be God? Another place, Prabhupada said that the original sinful will of the living entity is the desire to become the Lord or to become the Supreme. So that's the essential contamination. What happens is that there's a kind of there's a transcendental class structure in transcendence. There's Vishnu Tattva, that is to say, the category of Vishnu. And there's Jiva Tattva, the category of the particles. And it's the eternal Dharma, the essential nature of the Jiva Tattva, to serve Vishnu Tattva. Vishnu Tattva are independent, and Jiva Tattva is dependent, in a servitor arrangement. So this is just the ultimate facts. See, we are, as Jiva, essentially and eternally in the category of servant. But a minority of us have got a problem with this arrangement. And we want to cross this class division. In the material world, you always see people want to cross the class division, you know. And from being a servant to becoming the master and having other servants. So in the material world, there's some social mobility. But in transcendence, as between these two groups, Vishnu Tattva and Jiva Tattva, these are our essential natures. So the living entity wants to become the Supreme. Therefore, he's got a problem with reality. A living entity who wants to become the Supreme has got a problem with reality itself. And he's hostile toward the source of all being, Krishna. Which means actually it's hostile to existence itself, because there's nothing but Sri Krishna. This is a very bad position to be into, to be hostile toward existence itself and toward the source of all existence. So, of course, Prabhupada describes what happens, that the position of God is already taken. The jiva is essentially jiva, is essentially servant. So Krishna creates an illusion for the jiva. That now here's this place, which we're going to call the material world, where you can have the illusion that you are not the servant, and I will obligingly disappear from view as you desire. And so the illusion of separate existence arises. So one definition, Maya, that which is not, is that we have this illusion that we are separate from Krishna, and that the material world is separate from Krishna. So when a jiva, in this condition, is alienated from Krishna, and the essential act of his alienation in the beginning is sense gratification. The senses of the jiva are originally made to serve Krishna. That's their original and natural use, to serve Krishna. And now we're going to take these same senses, which are designed to serve Krishna, and use them in a perverted way, that is, for sense gratification. Immediately, as soon as the desire for sense gratification, that is to see myself in the center as the enjoying agent, as soon as that is there, my senses, God disappears from view. Those senses become incapable of apprehending what is the first of all facts, which is the presence of Krishna. That disappears from view. And when we take any sense object and utilize it as a present or potential act of sense gratification, that sense object also loses its connection in our view with Krishna. And so this illusion of a separate universe, secular universe, unconnected with God, arises. And you get more or less two mentalities of opposition to Krishna. One is the karma mentality, and the second is the jnana mentality. So we come to this material world with this icha and dvesha. That means we're now engaged on a God project. Everyone in the material world has got some kind or another of a God project going. You know, how I can be the supreme or the lord of all I survey. And a great deal of human psychology can be seen as the devices by which people engage in this project of becoming the lord of all I survey, because it's patently false. So therefore everything becomes very slippery and very tricky and very deceitful. And of course the first person one has to deceive is oneself. Because, of course, the facts of their birth, death, old age, and disease, the fact is, Prabhupada explains over and over, that we are in under control, but we think we're going to become the controller. So that's the karma God project, how I can control material nature. When the karma mamamsa school of philosophy developed, that's what they actually thought they were doing. That by performing a sacrifice, you could compel the gods. It wasn't that, you know, you had to satisfy the gods and the gods being pleased would do what you want. No, when you said your mantras the right way, they had a power that forced the gods to act. So that actually, when you actually did a sacrifice, you controlled everything, if you were really together priest. So there's the same mentality as in modern science. You know, you try to understand material nature, get it down to a few formulas, and then you can control it. And what do they want to do? Eliminate birth, death, old age, and disease. Right? You read these accounts. You know, people, the scientists are working on old aging process. They think that somewhere in your cells, at a certain point, there's a little switch that flicks, some kind of chemical switch, and you start to grow old. We find that switch, we get in there, and we just flick it back. That's what they think, you know. They're all looking for that switch. They know the first one to find the switch will win the Nobel Prize and so on, you know. And people are waiting, you know, this discovery when it comes. So they think they'll solve these problems of birth, of death, of old age and disease. I don't have to get into this, but this is what's going on, this karma God project. I am the enjoyer and I am the controller. But then what happens after sufficient experience or sufficient lifetimes is you become disillusioned with this project. Because after all, death comes all the time. And that's the ultimate assertion of Krishna's superiority and our subordination to the control of Krishna via the material nature. And, you know, people do not get the satisfaction they're desiring out of this enjoying and controlling. So they become disgusted with the whole thing, and that's when they turn to spiritual life. And they engage in a big project of denial. Huh? And then we see the Jnana God project. Still the idea is, now I am the supreme, I'll renounce the world, it's all one, and I'll become God in this way. So that same false ego of becoming the supreme is there in this Jnana God project. In order to do it, I have to deny the existence of the material world, deny my individuality, deny the individuality of God, and so on. But this way I can carry this project through. I am the supreme. One year in Philadelphia, early in the 70s, there was this poster that showed up all over the city. It said, Krishna meditated, he became God. How did it go? It had Krishna meditated, he became God, the love divine. Buddha meditated, he became God, the knowledge divine. Jesus meditated, he became God, the forgiveness divine. Now God wants you to meditate. You can become God. You know? Just like that. Huh? The jerk divine. I wrote an article about that for BTG. Yeah, the jerk divine. This was Sri Chinmoy, who was a Bengali expert, who was a big tennis player. But he had his following. I guess he still does. But that was what they were saying. And they preach the Ramakrishna philosophy, you know, but with the idea that you practice bhakti. I'll get into that a little later on. But anyway, the Gyan God project is there. You become God. So that same false ego is carried over into spiritual life with the idea of becoming the supreme. Now notice in both of these cases, it's essential not to see a connection with God of anything. In the platform of karma, there's a disconnected universe. The senses are enjoyed, the material world is enjoyed, and God or the gods, they fade into the background if they're there at all. The older system is, there's a kind of religious karma, you know, where God is an instrument for your sense gratification. You know, and as soon as that sense gratification is not there, immediately there's no God. This is people's biggest gripe against God, that he doesn't gratify their senses. And therefore, how can there be a God? This connect guy that God is the auto supplier. But that's not the God who's are gratifying the senses. This is not who Krishna is. That means you've turned the master into the servant. So that's a fictional God. You've created a fiction. And belief in God is just the conviction that somehow or other, sooner or later, my senses will be gratified. If not in this life, then in the next. Because there's somebody looking after my sense gratification. And then, of course, in science, it becomes disconnected, more radically in a way. And the origin of the universe is simply ascribed to chance. Now, the idea of chance, absolute chance, as used by modern science, is the idea that there are sheer additions to reality. That if you know all the causes, say you're omniscient, and you know all the causes of an event completely, you still cannot predict the effect because there's things that happen with no cause. That's the idea of chance. It's not the idea that there are causes you don't know. It's the idea that there absolutely are no causes. In other words, things just pop into existence. And once you accept that, then everything makes sense. If you don't accept it, then you have to change your major from physics. And this is what I know, a person who was majoring in physics and couldn't grasp a hold of this idea. And the answer was, you'll get used to it. You'll get used to it. So what you could view chance as is the injection into the universe of additional information or determination by an outside being. It could very well be that too, if you ascribe a cause to it. It's only their insistence that it's causeless. That we could say what they say is chance is the decision of supersoul, even from moment to moment. No. Just absolute chance. And if you don't like it, well, you'll get used to it. So you see, in the karma idea, you don't see the connection with Krishna. The world is here for me to enjoy. God is either non-existent or very remote. The idea that I'm the servant, he's the master, is not there at all. And you have the illusion. The sun comes up, the sun sets, everything is going on. And you somehow or other you see it just as there by chance, accident. No. Then when you get to the platform of jnana, the rejection of the disconnection of the universe becomes even more apparent. As we saw in Shankaracharya, what's the relationship between the material world as we know it and Nirguna Brahman? Is there isn't any relationship. It's also severed. Everything becomes unreal in jnana. The universe is not really there. It kind of floats without reason on this totally inexplicable avidya. It dissolves into non-being at every moment, as the Buddhists want to say, and so on. It's almost practically not there. Really, it's not there, but somehow or other it sort of haunts us like a ghost somehow or other. So this, you have two positions in the phase of karma, they're trying to enjoy the senses and the sense objects, and in jnana, the sense and the sense objects are just rejected completely. So on the one, it's the misuse of senses, and the other, it's the non-use of the senses and the sense objects. Jnana misuses the senses and sense objects. Karma misuses the senses and sense objects. Jnana just rejects the senses and the sense objects. But both these positions, from our point of view, are false. The senses have a proper use in the service of Krishna. And the sense objects are also to be not enjoyed, not rejected, but used in Krishna's service. Prabhupada said, if you go to a bank and say, all this money is mine, you're a criminal. And if you walk into the bank and say, I renounce all the money in this bank, you're an idiot. It's neither yours to enjoy, nor is it yours to renounce. It's Krishna's. always was, always will be. So you can see in that case that both the karma and the karmi and the gyani are wrong in their position. And so the world and the senses, both of them, are seen as having no connection with God. Even on the platform of Gyan, if I become totally self-realized, you can't say that I have a connection with God. I am God, or I'm whatever it is that I am, or am not. With no, you know, there's no worshiper, there's no worship, there's no act of knowledge, there's no knowing subject, there's no object, no, whatever. So, what Prabhupada analyzes, the denials of jnana, you know, in the Upanishads, it's the famous, it's from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, this famous phrase. If you undo this sandhi, it's na iti, na iti. Not this, not this. Or it's usually translated, not this, not that. This is how the ultimate reality is described, by the denial of all predicates. And as we'll see as we get a little survey of Western Maya bodies, this is called the via negativa. It's called negative theology. Apophatic theology with a Greek root. It's the same thing, that the Supreme is to be understood by the denial of all predicates, of all qualities, names, forms, relationships, activities. Neti, neti. There's hostility behind this, according to Srila Prabhupada. That it's an attack on God when we say he has no arms, he has no legs, he's crippled, he's lame, he's dumb, he's blind. In this way, what you do is you take one that you start off by saying is the greatest of all and reduce him down to zip. Nothing. Becomes cognitively identical with nothing at all. And implicitly, I make myself greater than God. I have relationships. I have a form. I can engage in so many activities. But God can do none of these things. So I become greater than God. He becomes, like one of the common phrases that people used to use in the old days when they come to the temple and preach Mayavad philosophy. Now I think they tend to stay away more. But the old days they used to come all the time. And I think God is just energy. Now notice that word just. Just energy. You know, you've just taken God and reduced him to a magnetic field. Or something like that. I think God is just energy. Automatically there's a superiority. I'm user of energy, you know, I plug in my air conditioner or whatever. But God is just energy for me to use. So there's a put down in this. There's neti neti. And it's an attack. So often you see that the Mayavadi's philosophy, this is the position that they preach, is that as long as you're in the realm of Maya, you should engage in bhakti. So that these people, like the Sri Chinmoy people, they pretend to be bhaktas. That year we had those posters come out, it turned out this Sri Chinmoy people were coming to give an introductory lecture because they thought they were going to opened a center in Philadelphia, you know. So the devotees in the temple were very agitated by these posters. Krishna meditated, he became God, the love divine, you know. So they said, you know, you got to go out, you got to challenge these people. So I went with a few devotees to their meeting, which is at the University of Pennsylvania. And so there are these yogis, you know, they're all wearing like gray flannel slacks, like the men, you know, gray flannel slacks, white turtleneck t-shirts, you know, short haircut, you know, they all look like, you know, like Pat Boone used to wear in the 1950s, and you know. And the room was filled with hippies and stuff, reeked of patchouli and marijuana. And the room was dark, and they had a little candle going, and everybody was, you know, sitting in variations of yoga postures and stuff like that, you know. So they saw us come in, you know, they went like this. You know, they knew what was coming, and we sat down right at the front, you know. So then when they start to talk, after chanting Om for a while and stuff like that, all they talked about was love and devotion and surrender, you know. They sounded just like devotees, you know. It was really amazing, you know. They tried to sound just like devotees. So, then when time for questions and answers came around, you know, I raised my hand, you know, and I said, I saw your poster, you know, Krishna meditated, he became God. I said, why did God have to meditate in order to become God? Which is Prabhupada's question about this, you know. Because he talks about it in the connection with the pastime of Putana. You know, Krishna, even though he was a little child, was able to kill her. He didn't have to graduate from the mystic yoga factory to become God. And so immediately things became like really disturbed. And actually some character grabbed me from behind. I turned around. He's looking. He says, "Hey, man, you're creating duality." He says. You know. So anyway, we have a few exchanges, you know, and what they say is, it's beyond words, you know. Everything is beyond words. It says, these are words, you know. It can't be explained in words. And I said, well, you know, you just spent a whole lot of time, you know, saying a lot of words. Now you want to say you can't use them, you know, something like this. But by then, you know, we'd messed up the vibes and everything. We didn't get anywhere. But it was really interesting, you know, this whole thing. So Sri Chinmoy does like that. He teaches them, you know, until you achieve, you know, the highest level. First of all, to creep up on God, you know, to get closer to God. First you perform this, you know, puja. And you select with the Mayavadis, they take this term Ishta Devata, your chosen God, who can be anything you want, actually, in principle. And you worship it, him, it, her, they, whatever. And, you know, gradually, somehow or other, through doing that, you become a little purified. And then at the last minute, you switch over to Mayavad philosophy. So what happens is that if you choose Krishna, you know, behave like a devotee, try to act just like a devotee. See, this is what Ram Krishna did himself, was he claimed to join every religion, practice their practices, and end up at the same place, that is to say, Mayavad philosophy. So that's where they got that slogan, Yato Mat Tato Pat. As many institutions as there are, as many ways to God. Yato matat, they all paths lead to the same place. That's another Mayavad slogan. Prabhupada points out that if you get the train to Chicago, you know, you will not arrive in Washington, D.C. anyway, that's their... all paths lead to the same place. So what they do, you know, when they try to practice Krishna Bhakta, and you see these people, they act just like devotees. But they use this devotion to creep up on Krishna. They get really close. And then at the very last minute, they whip off their devotee garb. They take off their sword. They go, neti, neti, neti. You know, and I'm God. I kill him and I take his place. You know? So I call that Putana Bhakti. Because that's what Putana did. To get close to Krishna, she dressed up as the goddess. Everybody thought she was the goddess of fortune, right? Coming to worship. And she comes in like a devotee. Everybody accepts her as a devotee. She's going to be like a mother. You know, she's going to worship him. But her idea is to kill him. So that's what this Mayavadi, they're worshiping Krishna, you know, but there's this hostility behind it all that I'm going to become Krishna. They don't want to acknowledge a categorical superior, you know, that no matter what I do, how great I become, Krishna's always going to become greater. That somehow or other, you know, I'm going to become Krishna. So they are attracted to Krishna. There's no doubt about it. The Mayavadis are very attracted to Krishna. You know. And but it's not love. I noticed this phenomena of attraction without love, actually. Very close up. In the case of Kirtananda Swami and his relationship with Srila Prabhupada. Because there's another relationship Mayavad philosophy can come up with. And Prabhupada explained like this too, that according to the Mayavad idea, you also become your spiritual master. When you become self-realized, then you and the guru are one, and you're the guru. The Vaishnava idea is you're always the servant. You never become the spiritual master. You always remain the servant. This is what Prabhupada said. Only one thing is to my credit, when one Indian man was telling him he had done miracles. He said, only one thing is to my credit. I've never tried to become the master. I've always remained the servant. And at one time, Prabhupada was illustrating this. He was on a morning walk and I think in Mayapur, and they had to, there was some obstacle where they had to step up one of the little dikes, you know, among the rice fields. And so one of the devotees helped Srila Prabhupada up, and Prabhupada turned around and pushed him. And he said, is that very nice to do? First you help me, and then I push you away? He said, this is what the Mayavadis do. For this is my spiritual master, I worship and do puja, but the idea is I'll become... I'll take your place. So this is what I saw. This is, to my mind, I saw the implicit Mayavad philosophy in Kirtananda before it came out while he was still talking about Krishna as God. Now his Mayavad philosophy is out in the open. But the first real expression of it was in his relationship to Srila Prabhupada. Because he had this conviction that everything that Prabhupada is, I am. And he would do things like, you know, put himself on the same level as Prabhupada, just by saying, for example, that he was the founder acharya of New Vrindavan. But there's a sign that says founder acharya, you know, Kirtananda Swami. Well, I always thought Srila Prabhupada was the founder acharya of New Vrindavan as part of ISKCON. But that means he and Srila Prabhupada are partners, or what does it mean exactly, you know? So there was this tendency in him. So I realized that he had also been, and Kirtananda would have insisted, no, I love Srila Prabhupada. But no, he's attracted to Srila Prabhupada. He's attracted by his renunciation, by his scriptural knowledge, by his spiritual potency. He's attracted by all of that. But if it's love, it's a strange kind of love because it's not generous. He didn't wish Srila Prabhupada well. He wanted to wake up in the morning and find all these things transferred to himself. You understand? It's not love, it's envy. St. Augustine says that love means to want the other to be. I don't think that's complete, but it's certainly an essential component. Love means to want the other to be. So that means if I love my spiritual master, I want him to be my spiritual master. And I want to remain in the position of servant. So this love where you don't want the other to be, where you can admire, attracted to so many things, but ultimately you want them for yourself, that's not love. So this is what you see with the Mayavadis and Krishna, God, you know, they admire Krishna, they like He spoke the Bhagavad Gita and so on. He controls the universe. But they want that. They want that all for themselves. They don't want him to be. They want to say, you, Krishna, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, they don't say that. Here's what you see. I want you to, this is wonderful purport that Prabhupada has to chapter 4, verse 9. What it means when we say, when we understand, janma karma chame divyam evan yo vedi tatvataha. That means the full assent that we wish Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activity does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode. So Krishna is saying, if you understand me, if you accept me as I am, then you become free from birth and death. You understand that I have no material birth and death, that I have no material activities, then you become free from material birth, material activities. So Prabhupada says like this, one who can understand the truth of the appearance of the Personality of Godhead is already liberated from material bondage. And therefore, he returns to the kingdom of God immediately after quitting this present material body. He says, such liberation of the living entity from the material bondage is not at all easy. The impersonalists and the yogis attain liberation only after much trouble and many, many births. Even then, the liberation they achieve, merging into the impersonal Brahma-jyoti of the Lord, is only partial, and there is the risk of returning to this material world. But the devotee, simply by understanding the transcendental nature of the body and activities of the Lord, attains the abode of the Lord after ending this body and does not run the risk of returning to this material world. In the Brahma Samhita 5.33, it is stated that the Lord has many, many forms and incarnations, Advaitam, Achutam, Anadim, Ananta, Rupam. He's now explaining what it is that we have to understand about Krishna. So he has many, many forms and incarnations. Although there are many transcendental forms of the Lord, they are still one and the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. One has to understand this fact with conviction, although it is incomprehensible to mundane scholars and empiric philosophers. As stated in the Vedas, the Purusha Bodhini Upanishad, Eko Deva Nityalila Nurakto Bhakta Vyapi Prejantaratpa, the one Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally engaged in many, many transcendental forms in relationship with his unalloyed devotees. This Vedic version is confirmed in this verse of the Gita personally by the Lord, that the Lord has transcendental name, form, qualities, relationships, and pastimes. That variegatedness, individuality is there in Krishna, and that is ultimately, eternally, and irreducibly real. He's the Supreme Person. This Vedic version is confirmed in this verse of the Gita personally by the Lord. He who accepts this truth on the strength of the authority of the Vedas and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who does not waste time in philosophical speculations, attains the highest perfectional stage of liberation. Simply by accepting this truth on faith, one can, without a doubt, attain liberation. The Vedic version, now listen to this, the Vedic version, tatvam asi, is actually applied in this case. Anyone who understands Lord Krishna to be the Supreme, or who says unto the Lord, you are the same Supreme Brahman, the Personality of Godhead, is certainly liberated instantly, and consequently his entrance into the transcendental association of the Lord is guaranteed. So that's what is meant by wanting Krishna to be. To say completely and fully, you Krishna, you are the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like Arjuna says it later on, right? Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram. He makes that confession. I accept you as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This, I'm reading here. 4.9. Now notice what Prabhupada says here. This is very, very clever what he says. The Vedic version, Tattvamasi, is actually applied in this case. So as we saw earlier for the Mayavadis, this Tattvamasi is the liberating utterance. You realize the import of Tattvamasi, which to them is, I am God. Then you become liberated, right? But Prabhupada says, no, the real import, the liberating utterance for us, the devotees, is not that I am God, but you, Krishna, you are God. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I accept that, which means I accept my position also as servant of Krishna. After all, we have to show our convictions by actually serving Krishna. As Prabhupada said somewhere, if you do not follow his order, where's the proof that you love Krishna? So this is what he means, that Tattvamasi, that art thou. You, Krishna, you are the Supreme Brahman. Not that I am Brahman. That's not what we're after, but understand that Krishna is the Supreme Brahman. And if we say that with full conviction, even just on faith, just by believing the Vedas and Bhagavad Gita, that Prabhupada says, instantly liberated. That's our liberating utterance. When we say this with faith and conviction, that means we're free from this spiritual disease of wanting to be the Lord or wanting to take His place or denying His reality, becoming independent. Everything is there. Yeah?
There's some indication that Srila Prabhupada knew that some of His disciples had this mentality of being attracted and not in love.
Yeah, sure. Of course, He knows them very well.
And then, but he still engaged them in positions of leadership.
Yeah. Nifty, huh? Nifty. You got to be really together to do that. To take somebody that's actually envious of you and still use them to spread the Krishna consciousness movement in spite of themselves. If somebody comes forward to offer service to a spiritual master, whatever their motive, he doesn't turn them down. He doesn't look at their motives. He says, here's a person coming to offer service to Krishna, I have to engage them. He knows what their motive is, but he doesn't. So they'll become purified. And even if they don't become purified, what was Krishna's attitude toward Putana? Yeah, right. What was Krishna's attitude toward Putana? He didn't feel threatened. Neither did Prabhupada feel threatened.
Well, John and Charity are just a demon.
Hmm?
John and Charity are just a demon.
How so?
Still he taught
him. Uh-huh. So, and Prabhupada knew that the damage there would be damage done. But he had the confidence that when the balance is there, the good would far outweigh the bad. But boy, you really amazing thing to do. Just amazing. Yeah, he knew that because Kirtan Ananda, and speaking of him, I guess that's who we're talking about.
It's actually others.
Yeah? Yeah. Yeah, sure. No, that's true. But with Kirtananda in 67 and 68, you know, he tried the same thing, started preaching Mayavadi philosophy, said we should dress as Christians. The whole thing was there. And there's a series of letters from Prabhupada about him. They just, you know, just like an x-ray picture of a disease, you know. It was just like had him down cold. And Prabhupada knew exactly what's going on. You know?
But he seemed to get healthy again.
There's two versions, you know, two speculative versions. I don't know which is two. One, they got healthy and had a relapse. One, that he just went underground and bided his time. I don't know what the truth is. I don't know what the truth is.
Someone told me that they said the reason Srila Prabhupada did that, can tell me if this is correct or not, is because he would rather have them on his side than an enemy.
Prabhupada said that there's a principle that it's best to keep an enemy close to you. He did mention that. But the fact is, you know, when Kirtananda blooped the first time, that's when he established New Vrindavan. He couldn't get anybody. Nobody was coming. People didn't start coming until he again went back to Srila Prabhupada and it began to develop. I don't know how much of a threat there would have been outside. But they came back for whatever reason, so he accepted. Anyway, let's talk about Krishna a little bit. So that was just an example of how this Mayavad philosophy can show up with regard to the spiritual master. Because after all, the spiritual master is a stand-in for Krishna. And so your attitude toward the spiritual master can reflect your attitude toward the Supreme Lord. Any other questions? Yes?
To some degree, those tendencies are there within all of our hearts.
Yeah.
So I guess they can, if weeds aren't pulled out, then they can.
Yeah. So we have.
Full-fledged.
Yeah, that's why Rupa Goswami said you had to become free from these two things, jnana and karma. The tendency to try to enjoy the material world and the tendency to become God by renouncing everything. Jnana and karma. Then you have pure devotional service. If those two things aren't weeded out, then it's going to be impure. It's going to be impure. And what we'll see in many of the selections we look at in the future is people who are actually seen to be devotees, but you know, there's this, they haven't weeded out their jnana. Nowhere else have I ever seen in any other spiritual literature, you know, this analysis with pure devotional service analyzed and singled out and distinguished from karma and jnana. I've never seen it anywhere systematically developed, as far as I know.
In the teachings of Shankaracharya, knowledge, study of the Vedanta, is presented as the main trend of spiritual development.
Mm-hmm.
How is it historically that Vedanta has been mixed and added with yoga, with bhakti and this and that? How did it happen?
Well, Shankaracharya set up, you know, for brahmacharis or monks, sannyasis, he set up a strict monastic system for the study of this. But then he also established the smarta system with panchopasanam, the worship of the five deities. Who are they? Surya, Durga, Ganesh, Shiva, philosophized Vishnu, the universal form. And that's what you worshipped. So that idea was there always, that you know, while you're still in the world, while you're still on the lower platform, Vyavahara, then this worship can go on. The more of an emphasis on bhakti, and the way I was describing earlier, that seems to come from the Ramakrishna mission, and from Ramakrishna. Before that, I don't know. But all over India, you'll see people like almost every worshipper of Shiva, almost all the Shaivites, you know, although they worship Shiva, they'll say behind that is impersonal. And we meet many people who, you know, they have tilak, they claim to be Vaishnavas, but if you talk to them, you'll find out that ultimately they're Mayavads, you know. Ultimately, they're Mayavadis. Yeah?
You say they come to the temple and they try to merge.
They just think God is a means to an end. How can you, with that idea in your mind, you know, what you got to do to be a bhakti is you got to pretend, you know, for a while that you're a servant, that God is great, that you're small, you got to develop all these motions. But in the back of your mind, you know, you're just waiting for the day. You know, it's just like a guy who's in a company and he's working his way up to be the president of the company. But he's just waiting for the day, you know. So he's serving the president, he's doing his order, but he wants his job. Yeah, it happens a lot, right?
Can it very well happen, though, that by doing that,
Depends, you know, how deep this hostility toward Krishna is. I mean, they become, something is better than nothing. I don't, you know, maybe. You know. Prabhupada said it's better to be a sahajiya than no devotee at all. Yeah? Well, you know, really, they tend to go together. I mean, the philosophy comes out of people's mouths. You know, the philosophy comes out of people's mouths, and if you hear the philosophy, you'll associate with them. And, of course, we're in the age of books, where you can hear the philosophy without so much association. But just to hear the philosophy, read a book, is to associate with a person. You know, and also pick up their qualities. In some ways, it's a more insidious form of association. I know a lot of devotees, you know, they like to associate with the material energy by watching movies, you know, which is like sort of seems a little safer, but is just another form of bad association, you know. And same, Mayavada, to read a Mayavada or hear the philosophy, you ultimately has to be hearing from a person. And the thing about associating with a real live people is that we're social beings, and you know we naturally respond to what we're with, and it makes whatever is being said more persuasive if you're with people who actually believe it and practice it, whatever it may be, you know. And that's just the fact of association, you know. If all the people you associate with are enthusiasts of bowling or something like that, it's very hard after a while, you know, not to think maybe there's something to this bowling, you know. So you choose your association. You choose this. But ultimately, I don't think you can divorce the two very easily from each other. Okay, it's time to stop. Thank you very much. So tomorrow we're going to tackle Plotinus and Dionysius. Get another angle on the thing.